breaking ball and a call. Strike three. Third strikeout for Zach.
He's going to just watch it go. A grand slam for Bryson Stott.
And there's a high fly ball. Deep right field. Harper watches it fly.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk a little Phillies baseball. As we're recording this here on Wednesday night, only one game in the books against the Atlanta Braves. Of course, the 2-0 shutout. Great performance by Ranger Suarez. The game on Wednesday got rained out. They're going to make it up as part of a split doubleheader on Thursday. So by the time you hear this podcast, the first game may already be in motion. But until then, we got some stuff to talk about. We're going to dip into the mailbag. We'll give you the latest on Bryce Harper's potential injury situation. But luckily, it sounds like he avoided something serious there. We'll talk a little Ranger. We'll talk about the bullpen. And we'll get into some Phillies trade deadline stuff, too, through the mailbag, all coming up here on this edition of Hittin' Season. First, just a reminder, everybody, that you can follow us on our Hittin' Season YouTube page. Again, we've got every roundtable edition of the podcast is featured there, as well as some shorter clips if you want to share them with folks. All you got to do is go to our YouTube, or go to YouTube and type in Hittin' Season in the search field, and there you will find our dumb-looking mugs talking Phillies baseball, and subscribe to that channel. That way, every time you're on YouTube, you'll know when a new episode hits and when we've got new content on there for you. Also, don't forget, tell your friends and family members about this fine podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you find your podcast. Leave a 5-star rating. Helps the podcast grow tremendously if you can do that, friends. All right, so like I mentioned, there's just one game to kind of chat about here before we get into some bigger picture stuff with the Phillies. That, of course, the 2-0 win on Monday night? No, on Tuesday night, because Monday was Memorial Day. Is everybody else having as much trouble with the days of the week this week? Maybe more than usual when you have a holiday on a Monday? I, for some reason, have not been able to get the days of the week straight in my head all week long. It's been debilitating. I'm not going to lie. It's been debilitating. What's been going on. But anyway, Bryce Harper, I want to talk about the first, before we get to the Ranger Suarez start, we got to talk a little bit about Bryce Harper. Now, of course, everybody in the stadium and everybody watching on TV on Tuesday night exclaimed loudly, shrieked, sucked in their breath, had a nervous breakdown when Spencer Strider hit Harper in the right elbow, that surgically repaired right elbow with a 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Harper went down. Obviously, you all have seen the clip by now. I don't need to explain it to you, but he was obviously in a lot of pain, came out of the game right away. Now, as I remember back to the 2003 NLDS, Game 4 against the Braves, like in the waning moments, the eighth inning, there was a play at first base where I think it was Matt Olson hit a ground ball to the second baseman, and Harper was still learning the position, got over to first base late, received the throw from Stott to end the eighth inning. The Phillies were three outs away from advancing to the NLCS, but remember, Olson ran into Harper's elbow and the back of his arm, the surgically repaired elbow, and Harper acted like he'd been shot. I mean, like they said after the game that it felt like a severe version of like a Charlie horse or a funny bone getting hit because some of the ligaments, the ligament damage that he's had there. He doesn't have as much protection there as he used to, I think is what they were saying. Anyway, that all flashed into my mind when I watched him react to getting hit by a 95-mile-an-hour fastball in the arm. X-rays taken during the game were negative for a break, and that is always the big worry, obviously, because a break likely means he's out 4 to 6 weeks. You're missing one of your best players until pretty much the All-Star break at that point, which is the Phillies could have survived it probably, but is not what you want, especially as Harper's been hitting much better over the last couple of weeks. Really has picked up that batting average. He's starting to hit some more extra base hits. He's looking much, much better at the plate. This was a bad time for this to come. Obviously, the fans were all over Spencer Strider, which is understandable. He's got to be better than that. And after the game, he admitted, you know, he didn't mean to hit Harper. He was upset a little bit that he did so. He wasn't beating himself up over it. You know, it's part of the game. I get that it's part of the game. He understands. Bryce understands. But, you know, Bryce Harper has had plenty of these types of incidents in his Phillies career. Remember back in 2021 when he got hit by an up and in fastball on the wrist, and then it ricocheted and hit his face. He missed a few weeks with that, but he said that he was not right at the plate for another couple of months after that. Like, he was terrified, which is totally understandable. And yet he came at the end of 2021 and ended up going on that rampage at the end of the season to win the MVP that year. So it was just a tremendous turnaround from Bryce Harper to overcome that in 2021. Then he got hit on the left thumb, missed 2 months of the season in 2022. We kind of forget that. He missed 2 months of that 2022 season. In 2024, he got hit on the left elbow by a pitch. He did play the next day because it was not serious. And now here in February of 2025, he got hit on the right arm. He was fine after that, but it was in a spring training game. But Bryce Harper has had these hit-by-pitch scares, which, you know, that was the real worry here. And I got to say, one of the first mailbag questions I want to get to today is something that we've been hearing a lot on talk radio in Philadelphia, been seeing a lot on the social media platforms. At Nick Garcia Jr. On X asks me, "The retaliation debate is always fun. What are your thoughts?" I was going to talk about this anyway, but this is a good way to get Nick Garcia Jr. Into the show. Thank you for sending that email. Obviously, as a guy who's in his late 40s, growing up on baseball in the 1980s, it was a different game back then. I think we all know that in an older time, 25 years ago, 30 years ago, one of the Braves star players would have gotten drilled by someone at some point in that game on Tuesday night. I do not think the Bryce Harper hit by pitch would have gone unchecked. Let's say Mike Schmidt gets hit in a 1985 game and Kevin Gross is on the mound a couple innings later. I just know that John Felsky or Lee Elia or Jim Fregosi or Larry Boa, of course, somebody in the opposing lineup is going down. Now, you don't want to see pitchers throw at anyone's faces or necks. You don't want to see anybody get seriously hurt. But back in those days, there was less concern for that. And there was more concern for making sure that you stand up for your teammates. I remember there's a legendary game, a legendary moment between the Braves and the Phillies in 1991. For those of you, you can see this on YouTube. It's out there. It's really kind of a funny watch. The Braves are finishing up a shellacking of the Phillies in this game. It's at Veterans Stadium, end of the 91 season. Tom Glavine's on the mound. He's trying to finish off a complete game. Like, the Braves were just destroying the Phillies. And I forget which Braves hitter a Phillies pitcher hit with a pitch, but a Phillies pitcher hit an Atlanta Brave. And Bobby Cox is on the mound. And you hear the Braves announcers as the inning gets started. Dale Murphy comes up to the plate. Now, for those of you who weren't around for Dale Murphy is generally considered maybe the nicest man who's ever played baseball. He is beloved by every teammate. And as a longtime Atlanta Brave, a legendary Atlanta Brave, he had very close friends on that Atlanta Braves team. But he was up first in the following inning. And I think this was the ninth inning. It was the end of the game. So this was the last chance for the Braves to retaliate in some way. But even the Braves announcers were like, you know, they've really got to retaliate, but there's no way Glavine is going to be throwing at Dale Murphy. There's just no way that's going to happen because Dale Murphy was so beloved by his former Braves teammates. And Glavine tries to hit Dale Murphy, tries on like three or four occasions in that at bat to hit Dale Murphy, but you could tell he didn't want to. He didn't want to. He missed wildly on purpose, didn't really ever come close. You could tell it was not a serious attempt to actually hit Dale Murphy, but you could tell that the intention was there to say, we are retaliating, but they didn't really retaliate. So, I mean, that just goes to show you, like, Bobby Cox, even though Dale Murphy was a beloved member of that team, he was now on the Phillies, and their guy got hit, so you're going to deck the first guy up next inning, which was Dale Murphy, and Tom Glavine just kind of refused to do it. It's a really funny video if you haven't seen it. And the announcers are like, he'll never throw it at Dale Murphy. He's like, whoa, maybe they will. Maybe they will throw at Dale Murphy. So I say all that to say we live in a different time now. Pitchers are throwing harder than they ever have before. And if one of those things gets away and does hit somebody in the head, you could be talking about a life-altering injury to another player. Like, I think we've learned as baseball fans that it's far more, I think it's far less impactful to hit somebody. Like, what is that going to do, really? Does that mean they're nobody's going to pitch inside to Bryce Harper anymore? They're still going to pitch inside to Bryce Harper. He's still going to get hit by pitches because that's where pitchers are trying to tie him up, is up and in. And that's just where they're going to live. And Harper kind of dives over the plate a little bit. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want one of my starting pitchers getting tossed from a game in the second inning on Thursday, especially with a doubleheader. Now that you've got this doubleheader on Thursday and you're going to have to use your bullpen all in one day, you can't afford to have a starting pitcher go out early in this doubleheader. So I'm not one of those baseball fans that thinks, you know, I've been hearing, you know, they got to respond. They got to retaliate. They got to hit somebody. I don't come down on that. If the Phillies choose not to do that, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with that. If a pitcher does take it on himself to plunk somebody, then you better do it with impeccable control and hit him on the back or hit him on the butt, hit him on the leg. You know, you gotta be careful with that. So I'm kind of torn on it. I'm not anti-retaliation because, again, I do come from this era of baseball where this was kind of an unspoken rule in Major League Baseball. You hit our best guy, we're gonna hit your best guy. But I think we've kind of moved past that. The key is winning, right? You sweep this doubleheader. Keep your starters in the game. Sweep this doubleheader. The Atlanta Braves are 11 and a half games back of you in late May as the calendar is getting ready to turn to June. That's the situation. That hurts more than plunking Ronald Acuna Jr. in the back and getting your pitcher tossed. So there's all kinds of... I'm not against it necessarily in the right situation, but I do think most of the time, just it's dumb. It's kind of silly. Retaliate in a different way. Retaliate by winning. That hurts more. But it was a scare from Bryce Harper. We still don't know. We didn't get any word on Wednesday whether or not Bryce is going to play in any of these games in the rest of the series, how severe the injury is, how he's feeling. He didn't talk to reporters after the game. But that was obviously the big story from the first game of this series against the Braves, which the Phillies, again, won 2-0. Now 9.5 games up on the Braves in the National League East. Thanks in large part to a phenomenal outing from Ranger Suarez, who is just absolutely pitching some of the best baseball he's ever pitched. He looks like the guy we saw in the first half last year. In his last four starts, he's 4-0 with a 1.01 ERA. He's given up 3 runs in his last 4 starts, all of them on a single home run against the Pirates, a 3-run home run. 25 strikeouts in his last 4 outings. Since that start, where he learned in his first outing coming off the injured list, he allowed 7 earned runs in that start. Again, just only 3 earned runs since. He did not have, I mean, he ran a lot of full counts in the game on Tuesday. But he did enough to get the Braves to chase. You know, there was enough life on his fastball to get Matt Olson and a couple other guys to swing high in the strike zone, and ended up giving the team just enough length to shorten the bullpen a little bit and get them through a 2-0 victory, which was, you know, that was a 1-0 game until the 9th inning when the Braves handed them a second run with a bases loaded walk. You know, it would look like that thing was going to be a 1-0 game, but Ranger Suarez goes out there. He throws 6 innings, 4 hits, 3 walks, 8 strikeouts, and then you got scoreless innings from the 3 guys in this bullpen. Your 3 high leverage relievers all gave you a scoreless inning. Orion Kerkering, Matt Strom, and Jordan Romano all come in and give you really only 2 base runners allowed in those 3 innings between those 3 guys. Jordan Romano looks so much better now than he did earlier in the season. And for Orion Kerkering, now 8 straight scoreless outings for the young right-hander. Still walking a bunch of guys. Still too many walks for Orion Kerkering. But in his last 8 outings, I think he's got 6 walks or so. So that's still too many walks for him. But Kerkering, Romano, and honestly, Matt Strom, I know he blew the save on Sunday against the A's, but he has been really good too. The velocity on Matt Strom's stuff is up. And that's really the better long-term news, is that his velocity was a little bit low at the start of the season. It's ticked back up now. It's in like the 94 range, 93, 94 miles an hour. So you get the feeling that he's turned it around at this point. And all three of those guys are stepping up in the absence of Jose Alvarado. They're still going to go out and get more relief pitching. But as of right now, those three guys are kind of holding down the fort. And we've seen some good stuff from Joe Ross and Tanner Banks recently, too. They do need help at the trade deadline in the bullpen. But I think right now those three guys are... I'm going to answer a question about them coming up in just a minute, so I don't want to say a whole lot more than that. But a good win from the Phillies on Tuesday night. Not a lot of offense in this game. Castellanos was the only player with a multi-hit game in this one. Max Kepler with the big RBI double in the second inning against Spencer Strider. Strider looks pretty good, man. Strider looks like he's starting to hit his stride. Bryson Stott at the top of the lineup, two walks in the leadoff spot and a hit, on base three times in five plate appearances. That was good to see. Trey Turner got on base. I got a few walks from different guys in this game. So a good win. Spencer Strider was almost as good as Ranger Suarez in this game, and Strider stuff looks back. And I appreciate what he said after the game regarding Bryce Harper. You know, he's like, anytime you see somebody go down, you have empathy. Like, I'm not a total sociopath. You know, it's like, I appreciate that. And he said, you know, the fans obviously were booing the heck out of him. But he said, you know, he's like, I understand it. You know, I love the fans here. I love playing here. It feels like a home game, which no, it doesn't. Don't say that. You don't mean that. That's a lie. But you know, the sentiment is nice, but I don't believe you for one hot second that it feels like a home game to you. Anyway, for this doubleheader on Thursday, it's a really good pitching matchup in game two. You're going to have Chris Sale going up against Zach Wheeler, the Cy Young Award winner last year against the Cy Young Award runner up. You'll have AJ Smith Shaver versus Christopher Sanchez in game one. But man, Sale versus Wheeler in game two, that is must-see TV, folks. But that's a good way to finish up your Thursday, watching those two guys go at it. So should be a very good doubleheader, for a very fun doubleheader for the Phillies and the Braves here on Thursday, once it gets kicked back up and going. All right, let me answer a couple of mailbag questions here. At Kesh25 asks, is it time to move Stott back down the lineup and either keep Turner there full-time or rotate Schwarber Turner? I have enjoyed seeing Bryson Stott at the top of the lineup. I will say that Bryson Stott here in the month of May has been struggling a little bit. His overall numbers, batting just .213 here in the month of May, with a .259 on base percentage and just a .300 slugging percentage. He has a .559 OPS in the month of May. I didn't realize his numbers were that poor here this month. He really has struggled, I think, a little bit. Batting leadoff this year, Bryson Stott hitting .250, .306, .371. That's a .677 OPS for Bryson Stott this year in the leadoff spot. Those numbers are not as good as I was expecting to see. So should they move him back down in the lineup? Certainly he's not leading off against left-handers. They have him down in the lineup. I'm fine leaving him in there against right-handers and having Schwarber hit fourth still. I want Schwarber in the cleanup spot. Stott at the top of the lineup is fine. I know the numbers don't look great in some regards. He did have a good game on Tuesday against Spencer Strider. So no, I don't think it's time to move Stott back down in the lineup. I don't think that's an experiment you want to dismiss already. I mean, it's just he's only been doing it for about a month. And he has had some games where he's been really dynamic in the leadoff spot. Right now, his bat looks a little heavy to him. And this happens with Bryson Stott. His swing gets long. The bat looks like he's swinging a bat that's about, you know, 3 ounces too heavy for him. So it seems like it's taking forever to get through the zone, fouling off hittable fastballs. But he did have some really good at-bats in the game on Tuesday. I would absolutely keep him in the leadoff spot against right-handed pitchers. I would keep Schwarber in the four spot. And then against lefties, I think Turner at the top of the lineup makes a whole lot of sense as well. And frankly, with Bryson Stott against lefties, he's getting platooned. The Phillies clearly see Bryson Stott as a straight-up platoon player. They do not see him as an everyday player. Now, they say that's more because of Edmundo Sosa, and that might be true. Sosa against left-handers is just too... it's too hard to keep him out of the lineup. And who are you going to replace him with? The only place you can really play him is either at first base, and he took over for Bryce Harper when Harper got hurt on Tuesday, but you want to keep Harper in the lineup against right-handers. I mean, against left-handers, because Harper's pretty good against lefties. But Bryson Stott's the only other guy. I mean, maybe Max Kepler. There was that, you know, we fooled around with Edmundo Sosa in the outfield for a little while there, but it doesn't seem like that is the direction we're going at this point, which is fine. Edmundo Sosa's an infielder by trade, so let's just keep him there. And with Weston Wilson back, there's no need for the Phillies to do that. So really the only person to swap him out for is Bryson Stott. And Stott doesn't hit very well against left-handers. So I guess it makes sense. But Bryson, it's just kind of, you know, the Phillies are running platoons at a number of different places. And it's pretty clear that the Phillies view two of their younger players as platoon players. Brandon Marsh and Bryson Stott are platoon guys. Johan Rojas is going to start against the lefties. Brandon Marsh will start against the righties. Same thing with Bryson Stott and Edmundo Sosa at second base. Not quite as much in left field with Max Kepler and Weston Wilson. It seems like Kepler is still getting most of the plate appearances there and will, even though he has not, that double aside on Tuesday, he has not performed very well here in 2025. But Stott keeping him in the leadoff spot, keeping Schwarber batting cleanup. At the MDDC asks me, how would you rank the relievers that you would like the Phillies to trade for at the trade deadline? As far as I can see, there are five guys. I am not including Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals, and I think everybody should stop thinking about Ryan Helsley of the Cardinals. Do you have an idea how hot the Cardinals are right now? The Cardinals are maybe baseball's hottest team. They won again here on Wednesday night in Baltimore. They are 32-24 on the season. They've won 18 of their last 23 games. They are tied with the Padres for second in the National League wildcard race. They're not trading Ryan Helsley, guys. They're not trading Ryan Helsley. So we're gonna put a list together here of five potential closers, and Ryan Helsley's not gonna be on it. Because the Cardinals, as it turns out, surprising everyone, are pretty good. At least they're playing pretty good right now. They're not selling anybody right now. Matter of fact, they might be a team that's looking to buy at the trade deadline. Well, the Cardinals never really buy big, but they're definitely gonna be looking to add. All right, so I will start from the bottom and work my way up from these five, okay? First, my number five choice would be the Angels' Kenley Jansen. And like the Cardinals, I'm not so sure that the Angels are looking to sell right now, although the Angels had been red hot, and now they've lost four in a row. They're 25-29, 4.5 games out of the wild card. But now they're like, the eighth team down on that list. So it's eighth or ninth team down. So I do think the Angels, by the time the trade deadline rolls around, will be looking to deal. And Kenley Jansen is probably a guy that will be, they'll almost, if they're selling, Jansen will almost certainly be at the front of those negotiations. He has a 4.96 ERA in 18 games pitched here so far this season. Not a banner season for Kenley Jansen so far, but he got off to a rough start and has been pitching a little bit better of late. He'd be number five on my list. Number four would be Felix Bautista. The Orioles are in utter free fall. Utter free fall. The Baltimore Orioles, outside of the Chicago White Sox, have the worst record in the American League. And they are just a game and a half above the White Sox for worst record. I mean, it's a horse race. No one could have imagined that the Orioles would be struggling the way that they are right now. The Orioles need pitching. They need starting pitching in the worst way. And I know that there's been some people who are thinking, you know, can you swing Mick Abel for Felix Bautista? And like maybe you get Cedric Mullins out of it, the center fielder, left-handed swinging center fielder, who is a good defender, has some pop, but kind of a low batting average, decent slugging percentage guy. He would be an improvement over what they have in center field, that's for sure. But you're not paying big bucks for Cedric Mullins. But, you know, I guess it just depends, like, how valuable is Mick Abel to teams now? But Felix Bautista would be number four on my list. He's having a decent season, but he is an injury he has an injury history, and the stuff isn't as good as it was beforehand. So again, I wouldn't be selling the farm for Felix Bautista, but he definitely is. He's somebody that could help this bullpen if they went in that direction. Number three on that list, Aroldis Chapman. Folks, this guy is still doing it. He's with the Boston Red Sox now. The Red Sox are also in free fall. In 24 games so far this season, Chapman has a 2.05 ERA for the Red Sox. He's on a one-year, $10 million contract with Boston, so he's not terribly expensive, although for the Phillies, who are over the number. But they're going to go over the salary cap some more anyway, and they know that. But Aroldis Chapman still has that plus-plus fastball, still has the great stuff, and he's left-handed. If you're looking for a Jose Alvarado replacement, Aroldis Chapman is as close as it gets, guys. And Chapman would be number three on my list. Number two on my list is, if you want a guy who you know has saved games before, who you know can get the job done, I think you got to go David Bednar of the Pirates. The Pirates, I think now they're in a position. I don't think they're going to extend. They're not going to give him a contract extension. He's been a little bit up and down. This year, he got off to a really rough start. A really rough start for David Bednar here to start the season. At one point this year, the ERA was up at around nine. He hit the injured list to start the season. When he came back, he was a little bit rusty on the other side. But since then, he has been pretty good. Here in the month of May, David Bednar has made 11 appearances. He's made 11 appearances, 9 2/3 innings, a 4.66 ERA for David Bednar. Not awesome, but I still think playing for Pittsburgh, playing for a dead team walking, how juiced can you get for that? You know, so I think David Bednar would probably, I think the stuff would play up. I think the energy would play up. I think if he came to Philadelphia, he would be a tremendous addition. And I think he would be a ninth inning guy that you could rely on and that you could count on. So he'd be my number two guy. My number one guy, my number one trade target right now is probably Pete Fairbanks of the Rays. Now, again, I don't know where the Rays are going to be at the trade deadline. Right now, they are two games out of a wild card spot, so they're probably not looking to sell Pete Fairbanks. So this is probably the longest shot at the moment of all the teams I just mentioned. They seem to be closest to the playoffs. They are the most playoff adjacent, but Pete Fairbanks has probably got the best stuff of any of these players that we've mentioned here over the last couple of minutes. So he would be my number one trade target if the Rays would be willing to part with him. And maybe the Phillies have something that the Rays would want and utilize right away. I could see the Rays swinging a trade for Mick Abel, but then who do they have closing games? Like, if they are serious about making a playoff run, he's your closer. So I think the Rays would have to kind of tank a little bit in order for them to become sellers and then for Pete Fairbanks to be on the radar. But that's my list. Kenley Jansen, Felix Bautista, Aroldis Chapman, David Bednar, and Pete Fairbanks would be that's my ranking of the relievers that I would like to see the Phillies trade for. That's actually the opposite direction. Pete Fairbanks is one, Bednar two, Aroldis Chapman three, Felix Bautista four, Kenley Jansen five. Those are the five closers ranked in order that I would want to see the Phillies, or the relief pitchers that I would want to see the Phillies go out and get. All right, a couple more to finish up the podcast here. At Harry Bickings asks, outside of Kyle Schwarber, in your opinion, who should the Phillies give an extension to? I have come to the realization that it's probably time to say goodbye to JT Realmuto. I am not going to give him a contract extension. If you can get him on a cheaper deal at the end of the season, on a 1 or 2 year deal, I say go for it. But there's no reason to give JT Realmuto a contract extension at this point. And I'm not giving Ranger Suarez a contract extension. I don't think they even can sign him to a free agent contract. Obviously, you've got Andrew Painter. Who knows what happens with Mick Abel? They've got some other options there. Right now, the guy you want to give an extension to is Luzardo. They've already locked up Christopher Sanchez. I think the Luzardo stuff, I think what we're seeing from him is real. It's all real. Like, the stuff is there. His sweeper, this new pitch, has been a game changer for him. He's pitching deep into games. He could win the Cy Young Award this year. So he's the guy that I would be giving an extension to right now. I would be giving a contract, and he's probably the only guy that I would give a contract extension to. I mean, everybody else in the lineup is already under contract. All the other pitchers are. I can't think of any relievers that I would give a contract extension to at this point. So yeah, it's Jesus Luzardo. And I really hope that gets done. I really hope they're prioritizing Kyle Schwarber and prioritizing getting Jesus Luzardo locked up. I think he wants to be a Philly anyway. He loves playing in Philadelphia. He loves playing for this team. He loves playing for a winning franchise finally. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like to go from playing with the Marlins every year to come into Philadelphia and playing in these games. He knows he's going to get October love. I mean, provided that the Phillies don't, you know, go in the toilet in the NLDS like they did a year ago, or in the wild card round, I guess, if they're a wild card team, he's going to get to play some October baseball. He's going to have those moments as a Philly. So yeah, that's the guy. That's my other contract extension other than Kyle Schwarber. At Hootoni mentions, someone on the radio today suggested putting Luzardo in the bullpen. Please discuss how ridiculous that is. What are we doing here? I don't understand the fascination and the desire to throw good to great starting pitchers in the bullpen. If you've got a starter who is effective and giving you multiple innings, why would you do that? I know the Phillies have a strength here, but you don't, this guy, if you don't want him, if you don't have plans to use him as a starter, then you can trade him for a reliever. Mick Abel's one guy that I could see it making sense, because if they don't swing a trade for him, and if they think they want him as a starter maybe in future years, but you want to utilize him on the big league roster this year, you could say to him, hey, kid, this is your opportunity to get into the big leagues every day and get into the big leagues right now and potentially play October baseball. You can be a high leverage right-handed reliever. Now, I would kind of hate to do that to Mick Abel now that he's finally gotten his career as a starter on track. And I don't think the Phillies are going to do that simply because they have been waiting for this Mick Abel breakout to occur. And one of the things Rob Thompson said was, sometimes when you see a kid have a big league debut like he had and then get sent back down to the minors right afterwards, the game after that is usually a disaster because the pitcher was like, I just was at the major leagues. I just struck out 10 batters in my major league debut. I outdueled maybe one of the favorites to win the National League Cy Young Award. And now here I am again back in Lehigh Valley. But he didn't. Mick Abel went out there this week and pitched a great game. And he said that, and Rob Thompson said that really opened his eyes as much as anything. That kind of proves to the maturity of Mick Abel and the consistency and the mindset change that we're seeing from Mick Abel this year. I think he's going to be back in the big leagues pretty soon. I don't know exactly how. I don't think it's going to be as a reliever. Because he's put in all this work, because he's finally developed into the starter that they drafted him in the first round, I don't think they'd want to throw that away and make him a reliever and put him in the bullpen. But maybe they also don't want to trade him away and get rid of this asset that they have for a reliever. I don't know. But putting Luzardo in the bullpen is so far beyond stupid. You talk about something that would truly damage you as a team. First of all, Luzardo doesn't know how to be a reliever. Like we've been talking, it's not easy to get guys to totally change up how they prepare for games. I know Ranger did it. Remember Brett Myers doing it. Some guys can do it. But Luzardo is also a guy who has had major arm surgery, elbow surgery in the past. You don't want to fool around with those guys like that. So this is such a dumb idea. It's why you're also not going to see Andrew Painter as a reliever. You're not going to damage these arms by suddenly switching up how they prepare for games when you can figure out another way to fix your bullpen. So can we please stop trying to figure out ways to put starters in the bullpen? Ranger Suarez, I maybe could see. If Aaron Nola comes back and you bring up Andrew Painter, maybe you could put Ranger Suarez in the bullpen for another lefty. That's the only one that makes a little bit of sense, and only because he's done it before and knows how to do it. But even then, the way Ranger Suarez is pitching, wouldn't you rather have six innings of Ranger Suarez than one? Yeah, I would. At Northern Will 4 asks, is it better to trade Ranger for a high leverage arm with some control rather than put him in the bullpen? I'm so glad you asked this, Northern Will. Since starters garner a higher return than relievers, I'd say yes. Plus, he will certainly reject a qualifying offer. That compensatory pick is worth more to a non-tax paying team. Well, here's the deal. If you trade Ranger Suarez midseason, the team that trades for him cannot offer him a qualifying offer. So he already, that team would not get a compensatory pick. They wouldn't get a compensatory pick for the qualifying offer, for losing a player after he rejects the qualifying offer. So whatever team Ranger Suarez gets traded for, they cannot offer him a QO. So kind of put that aside. But he is more valuable as a high leverage starter, right? Then put him in the bullpen. Starters are worth more than relievers. It's just that simple. Look at all these teams that need starters. The teams that Phillies are not going to trade with, by the way. The Phillies are not going to trade Ranger Suarez to the Dodgers and risk seeing him in the playoffs. If Ranger Suarez gets dealt, it's going to be to an American League team. They are not going to trade him within the National League and risk seeing him before the World Series. So yes, I do think it is better to trade Ranger for a high leverage arm with some control rather than put him in the bullpen. If you're asking me would I trade Ranger Suarez for Pete Fairbanks, I don't think I would. I don't think I'd would. I would need to get an offensive player in return as well. I'd need to get some help on offense. You know, if the Rays have a center fielder that they could send our way, or another outfielder who could have a little bit more of an impact at the plate. I don't think the Rays have a guy like that. And plus, I gotta say, I think it's gonna be easier to trade Mick Abel to a team at the trade deadline than Ranger Suarez, because if you're a losing team that's selling at the trade deadline, what use is Ranger Suarez to you? He's not going to help you do anything. You want young prospects. So if you're going to trade Ranger Suarez, it has to be a team that's also a good team that is looking to make the playoffs, that needs help in the rotation. But does a team like that have an offensive player that they want to trade away for Ranger Suarez, or a reliever and an offensive player? Why would a contending team? What contending team has enough of those players? Offense is down across baseball. There's no baseball team in the league that has an offense so good that they can just give somebody away or trade somebody away. Every bat is needed. So I don't see a Ranger Suarez trade, guys, in any way, shape, or form. I could see a Mick Abel trade, but I absolutely do not see a Ranger Suarez trade coming up here at the trade deadline. And before I go, I have mentioned on this podcast numerous times that you can also participate in the show by recording a voice memo on your phone and then emailing it to us, hittandseason@billypenn.com. I'll get that right. hittandseason@billypenn.com is how you send it over to us. We'd love to get your thoughts on what's going on with the Phils and with the show and everything else. So it's your opportunity to participate in the show. And good friend of the podcast, Paul Pazimino, has sent over a voice recording to take part in the show. And so, yeah, here's Paul.
Hey, John, Justin, and Liz. This is Paul, great fan of the podcast since the beginning. As you know, I was super happy to hear you talk about the Phillies A's game on Saturday. My son and I made the 2-hour trek to go out there. We could only go to one game because I wasn't going to do that 3 days in a row. And we picked the right one. And that game had absolutely everything. And in my mind, it's like why baseball is the greatest game there is. I mean, it was insane because like we're up, it's tied, they're up, it's tied, we're up, it's tied. Kept going through that the whole game until the end. And with that Marsh throw, I mean, it was almost like being there for Bedlam at the bank. You just can't believe your eyes. We thought it was over, bases loaded, full count. Kirkering just makes one wrong pitch and the game's over, or he makes the wrong throw and the game's over. And there was a family in front of us. It was their first game. It was an Indian American family. And I told them, it was like, you, it's not always like this, but when it's like this, it's the best. And they had the greatest time. It was half the place was Phillies fans. I guess the biggest crime is that only like 12,000 people got to see that game live because that crappy park is so small. And the A's ownership is a joke. But that was just an epic, epic game. I'm so in even more in love with this team after watching the way they clawed back. And Kepler got his hit just the way John always predicted he would. Ninth inning heroics from Kepler. I believe somebody actually mentioned that he did have those kinds of heroics on his last team. So there he was showing up again. The only thing I would take away is that I was not feeling so great about the idea of looking at Mason Miller in the future because he kept giving it up. And he seemed like a guy who could get rattled. Like, I know he made it the third day, and it is something that he was able to go 3 days in a row. But they got to him two nights in a row, and that didn't give me a lot of confidence that they should be looking at him. Who knows? Maybe he'll turn it around. But when Kepler hit that 101-mile-an-hour pitch out at the same velocity it came in, it made you think maybe this guy's not such an undefeatable foe. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep doing it. And yes, the Phillies are winning the World Series this year. Go hitting season.
I love a fellow believer. That's right. The Phillies are winning the World Series. And I guess I should have included Mason Miller in my list of relievers that the five relievers that I want the Phillies to go after. I'll put him at the top. I just don't think the A's are moving Mason Miller in any way, shape, or form. And I'm concerned about what the price would have to be to go get Mason Miller. And I agree with Paul. Like, I mean, he's still throwing wildly hard, but he has been hit around. You can hit him. The hitters are learning to hit him a little bit. But that being said, I would have Mason Miller at the top of my list, of my wish list. So I feel kind of silly for listing all of those different relievers before. Mick Abel ain't getting it done for for Mason Miller. You're probably having to give up Aiden Miller for Mason Miller, guys. And I'm not comfortable with that. I'm not comfortable with that. If they did it, I would grit my teeth and grin and you know, just pray that, you know, Mason Miller gets you that World Series title that you absolutely got to get this year here in 2025. But yeah, he didn't look phenomenal. He pitched all three games in the weekend series, which was kind of unusual, and looked his best in the third game. So you worry that the A's are going to just ride him into the ground, but they don't seem to want to trade him. I think that the A's believe, despite the long losing streak, that they have a talented team. And they kind of do have a talented team. There's lots of good players on that team. But maybe you don't need Mason Miller. Maybe you do need, maybe you are interested in Mick Abel and some of the young players for him. But I don't think they're there yet. I don't think that's where the A's are. I don't really consider him as a pitcher who's available at the trade deadline, which is kind of why I didn't include him initially. But if he was made available, then yes, he would be at the top of my list. I would just be very nervous about what it would take to get him from the A's. All right, everybody, look, that's going to do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. I want to just thank everybody for listening to the solo edition of the pod. Again, a friendly reminder, everybody, to make sure to tell your friends and family members, people on the street that you meet, that you know are Phillies fans, tell them about Hittin' Season. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. Like Paul said, this is a team that's going to win the World Series here in 2025. So tell your friends to get in on the ground floor now and be a part of it with us. Again, watch all of our roundtable episodes of Hittin' Season on our Hittin' Season YouTube page. Go to YouTube, put in the search field, Hittin' Season, and there you will find us. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.